Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Does the lawyer you're considering hiring have malpractice insurance? And should you care? Well, how can you find out? Has he or she ever been disciplined? Do states make it easy for you to learn this important information? Well, we're going to discuss all this and more. My guest is Rod Santamoro. He's the executive director of HALT, an organization dedicated to empowering legal consumers through education and advocacy. Rod, welcome back to Of Consuming Interest.
Thanks for having me, Shirley.
Now, you do some really great things, and I've interviewed you and HALT people for a number of years. And you've just done a new website. It's really very exciting. I know you're excited about it.
Thank you. We are.
All right. Let's talk about the two issues that I think are so important right now that you all are focusing on. And this is the beginning one about malpractice insurance.
Correct.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the history and what this is all about.
Sure. Well, legal malpractice insurance is there. Supposed to be there so that what happens is if a lawyer commits malpractice, is negligent, and as a result of that, the client suffers harm or injury, the lawyer misses the statute of limitations or legal deadline so that the client can't bring their case anymore, or the lawyer does something so wrong that it compromises the validity of the client's claim, then legal malpractice insurance is supposed to be there to protect the legal consumer. However, our most recent HALT study has found that, first of all, basically only 26 states have disclosure rules where you can even find out whether or not your attorney has malpractice insurance. And just as, if not more shocking than that, only one out of 50 states requires its practicing lawyers to carry legal malpractice insurance.
And that's Oregon?
That's Oregon.
Okay. So really, you're kind of out there on a limb unless you ask, and they don't even have to tell you, do they?
Correct. There are some states where there's no disclosure requirement whatsoever, and the challenge there is finding out how many lawyers don't have insurance, but if there's no duty to report, how do you find out?
Right.
So it's very challenging. And
Let's just go back when you mentioned it. And, of course, I should tell our listeners, you are a lawyer.
Yes.
You're a member of the bar, so he knows whereof he speaks. Okay, so the thing for the consumer is if you hire a lawyer and they don't do something that really seriously impacts on you, then if they have malpractice insurance, you would be able to file a claim against that lawyer? Or do you have to sue them? Or how does malpractice insurance provide greater protection versus you just going in and suing the lawyer?
Sure. Well, the legal malpractice insurance, what that does is that provides coverage to the lawyer for specific acts of negligence. And one of the things we advocate for, I know we'll talk about it today, Shirley, is our model rule about telling legal consumers what the coverage actually is for. It is challenging for a legal consumer to sue a lawyer when there's no insurance, because even if there's a judgment rendered against that attorney, where's the money going to come from?
Right.
So the insurance is there as a protection for the client, and we would think it's a win-win situation because we would think that lawyers would want to be protected. So in case they do make a serious mistake that impacts the validity of a claim, that they would want to be protected so that they don't have to go out of their own pocket.
Well, now, is this very expensive? I know with doctors, malpractice insurance is a huge sum. What is it running in terms of lawyers? And I suppose it depends on your legal history, doesn't it?
It depends on that. I'll give you an example. Oregon, the latest numbers we have is that $300,000 in coverage costs between $3,000 and $4,000 a year annually. That amount varies, but what I call it is the cost of doing business. If you're going to practice mm-hmm. law, if you're going to be out there giving representation or representing people, you should have coverage. Now, we do provide, HALT does provide in our model rule that, again, I know we'll talk about, that attorneys that are either in-house counsel or in government positions would basically be exempt from these reporting requirements, because usually you'll find that they'll get coverage from other places.
Mm-hmm.
But for these private practitioners that are out there every day,
right,
that these legal consumers are relying on them, they should have coverage.
What is your model rule that you've referred to?
The model rule and we have it up there on our new website, is basically what it does is it takes the ABA model rule in this regard, which was formulated back in 2004, and makes some improvements on it. And what we've done is we've done a study of all the states in the country. We've looked at the ABA model rule, and we've took best practices from different states and put it all together in one rule. In other words, some states are better than others when it comes to disclosure. Some states are better than others when it comes to transparency. So we put everything together. We looked at what the ABA had done, and we put it together in a model rule that we believe would protect, would, you know, be a better source of protection for the legal consumer than what's out there now. And let me just say, Shirley, we're starting with actually disclosure. I mean, the legal malpractice insurance is important. That's only in one of all the jurisdictions in the country. Right now, about half of all states, there's not even a disclosure rule.
So even if you ask the lawyer, then I have to tell you.
Well, they're not necessarily going to tell you, or they're not going to have insurance. So, it's very concerning to us as an organization, because what we're finding is throughout the course of our research is, even though basically half of the states have some sort of a disclosure rule, that disclosure is not necessarily to the client. It's to the state bar. It's to a state regulatory agency,
which doesn't make its way into the public for consumers.
Right. So what our model rule does is it encourages a conversation where there's an affirmative duty for the lawyer to go forward and tell the client, not the client to ask and have to play a guessing game and figure out whether or not there's coverage.
Okay, now your model rule is what you set up, and you believe it should be something that's applied to lawyers around the country, no matter where they are. Now, is this something that you're pushing to the ABA to institute? You said that the ABA had put out a model rule. Where are you on this?
We are in the process, in the past basically 60 days, of launching this program. And basically going around the country to different media outlets and then different state bar agencies, and also putting this out, rolling it out to our members. And then, you know, certainly it's our intention getting that momentum going and then going to the ABA at some point in time, along with these different state regulatory agencies, mm-hmm. and saying, hey, look, you know, there's a real problem here. And there needs to be an outcry of support for something like this. So number one, we can get these disclosure rules going, and then hopefully that will provide lawyers an incentive to get the coverage.
Right, right. And we're going to talk about disclosure in a number of different arenas. So it's not just disclosing whether or not they have malpractice insurance, because there are some other very significant arenas that you all have investigated that the disclosure is just not there. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk about that. But let's just let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Rod Santamoro. He is the executive director of HALT, an organization devoted to empowering legal consumers through education and advocacy, something we're doing right here today, Rod. All right. Let's go back and just say, talking about, you were wrapping up with the whole business about malpractice insurance, the fact that they don't have to tell you, there's no way for you to find out. You can ask, but there's no guarantee that you'll be told, and there's even not even a requirement for malpractice insurance. I don't know, the whole malpractice business is not something I've given a lot of thought to, frankly, but I can see the value of it for consumers in terms of protecting them.
Sure. And, you know, just one more point too, Shirley, on the disclosure. You know, I would hope that an attorney, a member of the bar that has taken that oath, that if a client or potential client asked them whether or not they have legal malpractice insurance, they would tell them whether
or not
they have.
They would tell them.
So I would hope that would be the case. One of the main problems we see is, though, potential clients don't know, you don't know what you don't know, so they don't know what to ask.
They don't know to even ask about it.
Right. And then when they do ask, even if the lawyer does have malpractice insurance and says yes, well, that brings up a whole other slew of questions. Does your malpractice coverage cover my type of case if you make mm-hmm. a serious mistake? How much coverage do you have? Mm-hmm. How do I get that information? Mm-hmm. So our model rule that we're rolling out really addresses all those things.
So this would be something then, and are you, if this rule is enacted, if you're able to get this done, whether or not it's by the ABA or whether or not it's the state regulatory agencies are saying state by state that this is something that lawyers need to have. Will there be some way that a consumer can be sure that they have malpractice insurance? In other words, would there be some sort of register? Seems to me like a lawyer would want to advertise the fact that, look, we want to protect you. We have malpractice insurance, just right. like your doctor does.
Right. Absolutely. And again, going back to the model rule, what this kind of spells out is it's something that has, along with the rule, surely, is a client acknowledgement that the client will sign that they've gotten the notice from the attorney. Mm-hmm. And the notice includes the type of coverage,
right.
includes details. So the client will be fully informed. And this happens, of course, when you engage the attorney for services.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, one final point on that, what you may hear from some people opposed to legal malpractice insurance is, well, there's client security funds in most states regulated by the bar.
Mm-hmm.
However, generally speaking, client security funds only cover basically theft. They don't cover negligence. And there's a lot of different rules in regard to those client security funds. A lot of times they're underfunded. The decision is made by one or two people on what to do. There's a shorter statute of limitations or a legal deadline. And again, it's for when attorneys basically steal from clients. It's not when they make a mistake, just a general mistake.
Right, right. Okay, all right. Well, let's move on to an area that I'm just appalled about, and that is the fact if disciplinary action has been taken by an attorney, it may be difficult, if not impossible, for a consumer to check it out. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's a little scary.
It is, especially when you're dealing with a self-regulated profession that is a noble profession where people's lives are on the line, their careers, their financial well-being. And not to be able to make a fully informed decision about who you hire to entrust all of that to is very concerning for us. So we've aggressively rolled out this other new program that we're about to talk about here this year.
Okay. And that program is dedicated towards making this information available to consumers. Now, tell us the process. What happens right now, generally, if a consumer has a complaint against a lawyer, they would go file it with their local bar association. Is that correct? Or what would you do?
Well, first of all, it's going to vary by state.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people, what they do is they first go to the state bar website, which gives some information. Again, some states are better than others on how to file a complaint. There are even states out there that, you know, go to great lengths on the state bar website to say, here's the information, but if you can resolve your discrepancy or your issue with your lawyer, you know, we encourage that as well. I mean, but the point is that there should be a clear path for a legal consumer to make a claim, a grievance against a lawyer where they have been harmed or they've been wronged.
And now this is something that would have to be instituted by the states, the bar associations.
Well, it depends.
Because the Bar Association is the one that reviews complaints when they do get them, right?
Right. You have the state bar. You have the lawyer discipline committees in some states' bars. But it depends on the state. Again, each state can be a little bit different.
Different.
But basically, a legal consumer is going to make a phone call to the state bar. They're going to look at the state bar website. And there's going to be instructions there specific to that state.
Mm-hmm.
There are even some states that have almost like an alternative dispute resolution where the state bar has somebody that basically acts as an intermediary,
mm-hmm.
and they try to resolve it without going through the grievance process.
That makes sense if you can solve the problem. But now let's talk about it's not able to be resolved with any kind of mediation. So you move on and the consumer has a legitimate complaint against a lawyer and there's actually disciplinary action taken by the bar, whether that means that they fine them, slap them on the wrist or suspend them or whatever. The consumer cannot find out that information. Is that what I am to understand?
Well, herein lies one of the main problems, Shirley, and that is not in all instances, but there are many instances where a legal consumer will not be able to find out the disciplinary actions that an attorney has gone through when we're talking about private discipline. 38 states have private discipline, which means a lawyer will have been found that they did something wrong, basically
by other lawyers,
by some panel, and that's a whole other issue about having more non-lawyers on these panels. But basically, you have a group of individuals, either in every state, either 50% or more are lawyers. Okay, that find that a lawyer's done something wrong. There's been an ethical violation that's been found to have happened. They've been convicted, guilty, however you want to say it. And if there is private discipline, that means, number one, that you won't know as a legal consumer who that attorney was that was reprimanded or disciplined or sanctioned. And number two, you very probably will not find out exactly what the discipline was. If anything, you'll find a general one-liner or something like that in a state bar publication. But the point is that if you are a legal consumer and you're looking to hire a lawyer, where there's been private discipline against those lawyers that you're looking at as a legal consumer, you're not going to know.
Now, you say private discipline. In other words, the consumer didn't take them to court.
Well, generally speaking, there's two issues there. Number one, was there malpractice? And number two, was there a grievance? Because you can have a situation where a lawyer is found basically guilty of an ethical violation but didn't commit malpractice.
I see. Okay.
So it doesn't mean that they necessarily took them to court, but what it means is if a legal consumer wants to find out if that lawyer did something wrong, you're not going to find out the details about that lawyer if it was a private reprimand or private sanction. And then what I know we'll talk about in a second, in many states, you won't find out about pending disciplinary charges. You will only find out once there's been a public sanction, a public reprimand, public discipline. So you have a whole bunch of lawyers out there that have been disciplined that the public won't know about. Now, the different state bar associations say, generally speaking, that's for lesser forms of punishment. But it's Halt's position that if any lawyer...
It's punishment? They've been found guilty of doing something that was not in the interest of their clients?
Correct. But so Halt's position is, if that's the case, the public has a right to know about that. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. We take our oath of attorney in open court. We take that in public. If you violate that oath,
should
be public. So, and I know we'll talk about it, you know, as a second part of this new program. But we've also found that where there is disciplinary charges pending, as the lawyer is going through a disciplinary process, big or small issue, many states, you can't find that out. So
yeah,
that lawyer can be out there, and we found there are lawyers out there harming multiple clients at the same time, that people coming in to hire that lawyer
don't know it. Yeah. Let's just take a brief pause here to let people know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Rod Santamaro. He is the executive director of HALT, which is an organization dedicated to legal reform. And we're talking about some of the issues that they're addressing, including malpractice insurance. And right now we've been talking about discipline and how do consumers find out if a lawyer has been disciplined, the nature and severity of that discipline. And are there any places that I can go to get any kind of information? So if I'm going to hire a lawyer, I can't do it and check out like going to a consumer reporting agency or the Better Business Bureau or somebody to find out if there are complaints about this person. You know, you can do that if you're doing a business, or you can check out lots of things online. But I can't check anything out about a lawyer.
For the most part, Shirley, you're going to be relying on the State Bar website, because that is where the attorney's profile pages are. Mm-hmm. That is where their bios or biographies are. You may find through the Better Business Bureau or somewhere else where there's been a legal consumer that has taken the time and effort to go to different regulatory agencies to put information there. But for the most part, it's the state bar associations, because they're the ones that are basically, you know, you have a state bar association where you have tens of thousands of members. That is the central bank of where everything is.
And you can't get access to
the majority of states. You're not going to get the access that you want or you need.
Okay, now your website is halt.org.
www.halt.org.
Right. And you have on there also a report card on how states do in terms of their small claims courts, which is a something to me that that is so important to consumers. The limits are too low in most states. The lack of information. There's just a whole host of issues that you all have addressed. They really, everybody should go check out that report card because it really tells you a lot. It tells you the things you need to say to your legislators. You know, and some of the states have finally made a move and raised their limits to $5,000 maybe or a little bit beyond that. But that's nothing in today's world to sue in small claims court. And otherwise, you have to hire a lawyer to bring an action in court that's going to cost you more than probably the worth of what your case is. It's kind of a catch-22 for consumers, isn't it?
It's very challenging. And we've, you know, Halt's done small claims court work for many, many years mm-hmm. because it's, you know, one of the bedrocks, one of the foundations
sure.
of, you know, empowering legal consumers to handle their own legal affairs
right.
if they choose to do so.
Right. So as far as the whole issue of making for transparency in terms of lawyer discipline, how do consumers get their word in on this? They can join HALT.
They sure
right?
can.
They sure can, which is a nonprofit organization. It's www.halt.org. And by the way, you have some wonderful information on that website. You have things about living wills. You have trusts. You have you just have a ton of information. Everybody should go to it, Rod. What do you think about that?
I would welcome that. And we do have – and speaking of report cards, we do have two new charts on the website.
Okay.
One has to do with the legal malpractice insurance disclosure rules, and one is a state-by-state discipline transparency chart. So some of the issues we're talking about today,
yes.
we've actually compared the different jurisdictions to one another. So even though it will not be specific to your particular case and it won't really address specific instances of attorney misconduct with certain attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
It does give a general overview of each state, whether or not does the state have a disclosure rule regarding legal malpractice insurance, the type of disclosure required, and then how is that disclosure made available to the public. So that's there for everybody to see. And then mm-hmm. for the state-by-state discipline transparency chart, it talks about in each state at what point in time can you view a lawyer's disciplinary history for a particular case or their disciplinary history as a whole, and whether or not there's private sanctions.
Okay. So whether – in some cases, states, you probably can't get anything.
You will get next to nothing in some states.
Okay. All right. And that's what we need to look at. So at any rate, any last-minute thoughts here? We've got a couple of minutes. Some of the things you want to impart to our listeners?
Thanks again, Shirley, for the opportunity for HALT to be here. It's always a pleasure.
You all do good work.
Thank you. I would certainly encourage viewers to go to the new website. We're looking for feedback on this new website. This website is basically 45 to 60 days old. We've just launched it, and we feel very good about it. We're very excited. We think it's user-friendly. We think it's easy to navigate. There's a lot of useful information on there. So I would certainly encourage your viewers to go to that website and then to call or email us.
Okay. Now, let me just ask you a question. Are you encouraging people to send you complaints that they have? I mean, not that you're necessarily going to do anything with the complaint itself, but to let you know the nature of problem that they've had. Do you compile any kind of a database that you're using? Would this information be useful to you?
Well, we don't, and I'll tell you why.
Looking
out for the best interest of the legal consumer, as you know, Shirley, we give a lot of great information. We do a lot of education and
right.
advocacy work.
Oh, yes.
But we're not a direct legal services provider,
okay.
and we don't provide legal advice. And what I don't want viewers to think is they can send information to us regarding their case.
You're not going to do that. I understand that, right?
Plus, it's not privileged, so we don't want them to jeopardize their potential claim and send us confidential
right.
information.
Gotcha. That makes excellent sense.
But certainly, we would want feedback on our program and the positive difference it's making for them to be more educated and informed about the legal system.
Oh, yes. And the access that you provide to – really, people get a lot of stuff for free if they join HALT, and some of the things you do have a charge. Small charge for it. Modest.
Yes.
We're out of time, Rod. I can't believe it. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Rod Santamaro. He is the executive director of HALT, and I'm Shirley Rooker, and we thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.